the safest probably would be to continue with the distance learning if you're talking about student and staff safety. But then you're trying to balance that with student learning and equity, and that may not be the best outcome.
It's probably safe to say that educators, school leaders, and communities have never faced a moment in time with so many intersecting crises. By the way, what's the plural of crisis? It's now. Welcome back to Adventures in Ed Funding, the podcast series presented by CASBO, the California Association of School Business Officials. I'm Paul Richmond, your series guide. While most schools in California just recently wrapped up the 2019-2020 school year, the push is on to determine how to ready schools for the coming year. It's no easy task. School communities are sincerely struggling with what makes the best sense, especially as nearly everyone acknowledges there are still so many more questions than answers regarding health, safety, and funding. On this episode, special guest Daryl Camp, superintendent of San Lorenzo Unified School District and president of the California Association of African American Superintendents and Administrators, helps us explore the complex choices facing our school districts. How will schools provide quality educational experiences for students within the parameters of COVID-19 health precautions? And how to pay for it when state policymakers are contemplating severe budget cuts? We find ourselves at the busy intersection of multiple crises. To make it through, we'll have to keep courageously stepping ahead. We're pleased to have Superintendent Daryl Camp on the line. Daryl began serving as superintendent of San Lorenzo Unified in 2019. The district serves about 10,000 diverse students and is located in Alameda County in the Bay Area, south of Oakland and east of San Jose. Previously, Daryl served for 7 years as the superintendent of the Riverbank Unified School District in Stanislaus County, and also as the assistant superintendent of educational services. He has also served as a principal, assistant principal, and began his career in public education as a math teacher. We spoke to Daryl Camp via Zoom at his home on a board meeting day. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, Superintendent.
No problem.
I know we both appreciate how important context is, so I want to mention the context for our conversation. It's the Tuesday after a very long and traumatic week of events that have occurred both nationally and locally. The killing of George Floyd by police officers in Minnesota, on top of so many other unarmed African-American men and women killed by police, plus some high-profile racial incidents and ensuing protests across the country.
Yeah, it's been a really rough week, week and a half plus. It's been difficult. It's been extremely difficult just processing that and obviously finding the right words to say when there are no right words to say. And just to recognize that there's a lot of frustration in several communities, and particularly African-American communities, about the continued lack of justice in our society. So it's been difficult, and especially to say, because you're going through your own internal frustrations as well. So, you know, obviously I feel for the families that were most immediately impacted. I can only imagine what it's like to lose somebody to something that's so unnecessary and unjust.
Yes. And this all comes, of course, in the midst of a global health pandemic and an economic crisis. And it's even more trauma for so many of our families and students to be processing right now.
It is. It's a lot. I tell people, boy, in San Lorenzo Unified, we had a fiscal crisis going on before the Nova Corona crisis, and now we have this crisis. And before all of those, with well, I'll just say a consistent crisis that we have is in the communities in which I serve and lead, the crisis of not being able to provide a quality educational outcomes and opportunities for all kids and particularly African-American students all across America. So there are several crises going on, and it's overwhelming at times.
Well, we appreciate the work that you do and you're sticking with it and the leadership you provide at a time when it can feel overwhelming.
Yeah, some of my writing, sort of journal writing and writing letters, I process and say, boy, this is difficult, but we need people to lead in difficult times. And so I can't complain about it. I'm more about trying to do something about it. And that's why I wake up. But it is very difficult because there's at times it seems like there's so much to do. And the work that we do is so dependent upon working together in partnerships and working collaboratively and to have discussions. And while that's exhausting, it's the right work to be doing.
Well, as you know, too, the thing with crises is that we sort of have to both deal with what's right in front of us in the moment, but also with an eye towards the longer term. So thinking especially in the here and now, tell us, Superintendent Camp, what do you and other school leaders most need right now to be able to safely reopen schools and provide the kind of education that you want to be able to provide and that your communities want?
Well, I think what I'm hearing, and we have not nailed this down in San Lorenzo Unified, we're trying, we're having conversations with a number of our stakeholders. We have surveys that are going out. Some districts have already surveyed their community, the families, the staff, to see what are their thoughts about coming back to work. I'm guessing that is so different in different parts of the state. This state is huge, 1,000 school districts, 58 counties, and not everybody is experiencing COVID-19 the same. So that means that you are going to have different conversations and different outcomes. And I think given that diversity across the state, what most educational leaders would advocate for would be flexibility. We can't, going into next year, have the same way of accounting for student attendance and the way we associate attendance work versus enrollment. I mean, candidly, it makes no sense. And it didn't before COVID-19, that if students don't come to class, a school district gets less money. If you're talking about improving attendance and engagement, the solution is not less money. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a punitive type of approach that's antiquated.
And real quickly, just for those who may not be as steeped in the school finance details, this relates to the way the state currently allocates funds to schools. It's based on what's called average daily attendance of students, or ADA. By switching to what's called an enrollment method, schools wouldn't be penalized for absences at a time when we know absences may be much higher for a number of reasons. And so, Daryl, what other types of flexibility would be important for the state to grant?
The instructional minute formula or mandated requirements, when that makes sense next year, given that a significant number of districts I'm hearing will likely open up with some form of blended or distance learning in place, if not 100% distance learning. So flexibility with those things would be needed. Obviously, there's some advocacy for having some flexibility with the grade span adjustment and the way that calculation and penalty formula is set up if you don't meet that agreement. And that could all be mitigated with agreements with your professional associations or unions as well through the collective bargaining process. But those are the type of flexibility I think a lot of school districts need. The other one is safety. We've heard some parameters that have been discussed with social or physical distances. And I hear a lot about how impractical it is to keep younger kids 6 feet apart. But I've worked with high school students, and I don't think that's very practical as well. let's assume that my high school students have been isolating and physical distancing for the last 2 or 3 months. And when they get back together, especially with their boyfriend, girlfriend, I don't see them staying apart at the school site, right?
You gave me an image of a principal walking around on campus having to split up boyfriends and girlfriends.
Yeah. So I think a lot of what's being discussed have some assumptions that aren't really practical. And our community is going to be asking the school site, what are you doing to keep us, my kid or staff, what are you doing to keep us safe? And I don't think right now the answers we're getting are sufficient. So we're going to need some guidelines. And if the guidelines are so restrictive, and we understand why you're trying to mitigate interactions and the spread of COVID-19, but let's just say that. And then let's say, what do we have to do to provide the best education possible in a distance learning environment? And there are limitations to that. The other part we're going to have a lot of conversation about is there was sort of an agreement across many districts in the state for the secondary students that we would go to more of a pass-fail, credit, no credit type of a grading system. I haven't heard much about what that's going to look like in the fall, but I don't think it's going to look like the way it's ending this school year. So a much richer conversation will need to take place about what's a reasonable amount of content for students to be exposed to. And we're hopeful that they learn at the same time, not just exposed, but what's going to be reasonable. And then how do you measure student progress? How do you measure how much they know and can do with the current distance learning format?
You've given us several concrete examples, changes needed to some of the funding methods, more flexibility, clear guidelines from the state and public health officials about safety, and more guidance regarding learning expectations in the context of the extra safety precautions. All the while, of course, we recognize that the effectiveness of some of the safety precautions really depends on the individual behaviors of students or others that maybe can't always be controlled by the schools.
Yeah, in light of that conversation, you start saying, okay, what's the one thing? What can we control? Well, the safest format, and they're trade-offs, right? They're trade-offs. The safest probably would be to continue with the distance learning if you're talking about student and staff safety. But then you're trying to balance that with student learning and equity, and that may not be the best outcome. So in my system, we've set up our conversations will be centered around those three principles. Number one, student and staff safety. Two, student learning. Three, equity. So if we can't, there might be a possibility. There might be some systems where you say our neediest students get more on-campus time than some of our less needy students. And I have a hard time saying that because every student has needs. Mm-hmm. But it might be prioritizing how many students get on campus different days a week. Maybe some students are on campus one day a week, some are maybe two or three, or one group in for 2 days a week, another one 5 days a week. So I think that's why we need flexibility. It's really hard having the conversations locally without the legislature weighing in on the type of flexibility we have. You know, we could be talking options A, B, and C, but then when the regulations come, we could have spent hours talking about option A and B, and it could end up being time wasted if that's not part of the regulations.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's always been the talk about local control? Do you think this is a time for districts to just take the lead and do what you think is best and not wait?
Absolutely. And districts aren't waiting. The shame of this, though, is while districts aren't waiting and they're having conversations and they're putting together plans, by a simple piece of legislation that could take away that flexibility, and now you've wasted time. And time means we don't have much time right now. So getting clarity quickly with some of those waivers is actually one of the most valuable investments that could happen for us right now. Because we're putting times, not knowing we're playing the game and we don't know the rules for next year. Mm-hmm. And if you take options A and B off the table based on the regulations, then it could help us because now we don't have to spend time with that particular option.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And leaders are ready across, I'm sure, the state. We're doing it. We're not waiting for our legislature to come up with this or the governor to say this. We have stakeholders that we're working with consistently, ready to make decisions. But you can't go 100% into the decisions because you don't know the rules.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's what we've often talked about from education advocate perspective is that our locals know best. They know their communities. And so in some ways, they're best equipped to make these decisions and not have the legislature, which is much further removed, trying to decide on some of these details.
I would agree. One, I think that there needs to be greater connectivity between the legislature and the education community. There's been a lot during this period of time, but I think on an ongoing basis, there probably needs to be more. And there needs to be an understanding. I know everybody intends to do good, but this state is so diverse. And the more that we acknowledge that diversity and we allow some flexibility, I think it's important. I just think it's important. But I balance that with, I know if I'm, I try to put myself in the shoes of the other person. And if I'm a member of the legislature and I see something that just shouldn't be happening, the response is a piece of legislation that will govern, if you will, all 1,000+ school districts and more, even more than that when you consider the charter schools across the state. So I realize that's a temptation from the legislative standpoint as well.
Speaking of the legislature, in late April, Darryl testified on behalf of the Association of California School Administrators, ACSA, before the Assembly Budget Subcommittee No. 2 on Education Finance. He offered several key recommendations. Here's a brief clip.
And then the reality is we had a fiscal crisis before the pandemic crisis, where I want to say probably about 40 to 60% of the school districts already were having staff reduction conversations. I know in my personal situation in February, we had a resolution to the board where we were eliminating between about 45 full-time equivalent positions on the certificated side of things. And that was, once again, the crisis before the crisis. And sometimes the challenges with mitigating the learning loss that's occurring right now would be difficult when we're talking about expanding time, which means additional resources. So that's one of the challenges.
I listened to your testimony that day, and I thought you really added some valuable context and information, especially in your dialogue with the Assembly Budget Committee chair.
Yeah, with that subcommittee hearing, I can't remember when it was. It seems like ages ago.
Right.
But it did, from the conversation and just hearing, it seemed that there was, I'm not going to say a lack of understanding, but I don't know if it was explicitly said about the recognition that about, I think it's about 60% of the school districts throughout California before COVID-19 were already experiencing declining enrollment. And because of the decreased revenues that come with declining enrollment and the increased cost of running our educational business, if you will, and those increased costs, you're all aware of them, obviously the pension obligations, the costs associated with serving some of our neediest students with special needs, and the costs associated with the regular just step and column. And then, of course, if you have employees, especially in places where you have employees that are living in high cost areas, there's a increased demand at the table for increasing salaries. So with all those increases and with decreasing revenues due to declining enrollment, those districts were already having trouble. I'm not sure if all the members of the legislature recognize that dynamic is happening before even COVID-19. So I thought it was important to recognize that at that particular hearing. The COVID-19 just brings about another significant challenge for us. And I think everybody's experiencing it right now, just not knowing. We're sort of in a... Well, we're in a land related to the budget that it candidly, if you just plugged in the numbers from the governor's May revise, they're not looking pretty for many districts. And once again, I don't know if I'm 100% accurate, but if you had declining enrollment going into this, you're wondering how are you going to survive right now. And if that's 60% of the school districts, then that could create an educational crisis above the COVID-19 crisis for many of our students. The adults will have to manage it, but the students will suffer because of it. We will not be able to provide what the students deserve with the May revised numbers.
Mm-hmm. You described the proposal as not looking pretty. That's like a very diplomatic way of saying it, Daryl.
It's ugly. One of the ugliest things you've seen, probably.
Right. This seems like a good time to add a quick coronavirus budget blues update. Since the governor released his new budget proposal at the May revise, legislative committees in both houses have been meeting, including an unusual budget committee meeting of the whole state assembly. We're seeing some encouraging proposals from the legislature that seek to further mitigate the severity of the cuts initially proposed. It's a noteworthy step in the right direction, though much, much work is still to be done to prevent devastating cuts, and much still hinges on the U.S. Congress passing an additional relief package that includes more funds for schools. One other important development: a measure that would generate billions of additional dollars for local governments and schools, called the Schools and Communities First Initiative, just officially qualified for the November statewide ballot. The initiative would close certain property tax loopholes on corporate and commercial properties. We'll explore this proposal in much greater detail in an upcoming episode. And that, my friends, is your very brief Budget Blues update. Throughout his career, Superintendent Camp has been an equity champion, advocating that we provide additional resources to students who need them most and removing barriers for students for whom the system has not served well. One of the many ways he advances this work is through his role with CASA, the California Association of African American Superintendents and Administrators, an organization where he currently serves as president. By the way, CASA, UCLA, and the California Collaborative for Educational Excellence have collaborated recently on a terrific series of webinars all about advancing equity in an era of crisis. It's at caaasa.org. It's a 5-star recommendation from me, and we'll link to it in the show notes. Dr. Camp recently helped lead one of the sessions about planning districts' transition back to school. Superintendent Camp, we know one result of these intersecting crises that we're facing is that they've peeled back even more so the reality of stark inequities that exist and have existed in our communities and our schools. There's some hope that this will lead to even more focused efforts to rethink our systems going forward so we can make headway even faster in closing persistent inequities. Are there some promising opportunities out there in your mind to kind of build on the crisis and do a larger rethinking of the system?
Absolutely. Just on the most readily available thought that comes to my mind would be, we could have had a conversation about internet accessibility before COVID-19. COVID-19 has highlighted that item and almost forced everyone to act. We could have acted before, right? It didn't really take that, but we chose, and I say we broadly, we chose not to. So now that's a conversation, and we're taking steps. I do think we need to continue, and I appreciate the state superintendent for convening. I think it's State Superintendent Senator Leyva, convening the task force and having the conversations with the internet service providers, the ISPs. But that's one example of trying to level the playing field in terms of, I don't want to say level, but at least mitigate get on a similar playing field as those that have access to information. I think there's more room, though. I mentioned the grading conversation. I think if we're in a distance learning environment, we're going to have to severely rethink how we assess students and grade students. And I think that's another conversation that could have and should have been had before COVID-19. We have an inequitable grading system that has an assumption that students come in at a certain level and have the same amount of supports while trying to achieve a similar or same levels of learning, if you will. But we know that's not the case. Every kid doesn't have the same support. Kids don't come in on the same level. And there are some kids are more advantaged when they go home than others. So I think it's an opportunity to rethink that, rethink some of our assumptions and our previous practices.
What additional types of advice can you offer for all of us?
I think we're going to need to give each other a lot of grace and understanding and recognize for those that are pretending like they have it all together for 2021, I don't see everybody that's 100% sure of everything for 2021. I think we're going to have to build a system that needs to be able to switch rapidly from one system to another in such a way that mitigates the learning loss that happens no matter what delivery system that you're utilizing. And I say that because you might have a system in place, and then all of a sudden, when there's a COVID-19 positive confirmed case in your community, it's going to have shockwaves at different points. And I know before the pandemic really got going, we were told that if we had a positive case in our community, in our school community, then the school, the school should shut down for 14 days. Mm-hmm. And now obviously there's a lot of conversation about keeping staff and students in these bubbles. So you don't have to close down their entire school or the entire, it's just closing down that bubble of students and staff that are directly impacted or have had prolonged exposure. So I think we just have to be ready to fluidly go in and out of these different arrangements. But goodness, I say that easily, but that's such a challenge. The other part of that, I think it's so important to look at and have a plan for developing relationships at the start of the school year. You need the relationships, the teacher-student relationships as well as the family. That's critical. If you're really relying on your families to be partners, we have to, more than we've ever before, have to rely on the families to be partners and to understand the unique circumstances of the families. That's going to be such an important component going into the next school year, because we know that we're stressed, but I can imagine a family is stressed if you're worried about a job. And if you do have a job, that doesn't minimize every stressor. And in fact, a job might actually increase the stressor, right? Of what I'm going to do with my 6-year-old kid if they're only coming to school 1 or 2 days a week and I'm just starting a job. You know, those stressors, we're going to need to know where families are so we can try to meet those needs.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest concern you are hearing from your families? Is it safety?
Yeah, that's be number one. In early surveying that we've done, safety would be number one. And that's why, like I said, we need some flexibility with this antiquated system of attendance and funding based on attendance. We have families that are saying, hey, my kids, they have a compromised immune system. It's no way I'm going to send my kid into that environment that's increasing their interactions. They need to be home. So, you want to respect that decision, and you can't go through a student attendance review board process when it's parents selecting to keep their kid home under these circumstances, right? And that's our traditional system of, quote unquote, dealing with parents that aren't getting their kids in school. Mm-hmm. But that's not applicable under these circumstances. So I think we just need to acknowledge that and try to work with our families and create a lot of IEPs, candidly, to make it work, which puts another burden on our educator force, right? It's one of the greater challenges with differentiation. So at what level under that system can you build relationships and differentiate for each student and family condition? So those are the stressors that I'm hearing.
Well, Superintendent Camp, we're so grateful for you talking with us, and especially I know it's your lunch hour on a board meeting day, which is an especially busy day. So we're so grateful. Any words of optimism that you can leave us with? I mean, what keeps you optimistic despite these very daunting pressures and challenges?
Well, thanks for having me also. I always have an appreciation for the California Association of School Business Officials because of the work that's done. Just a lot of highly talented people in the organization to keep our school finance going. My optimism comes from actually about 10, 11 years ago. I just remember being in educational system 10, 11 years ago during the recession and seeing how we came out of it and some of the opportunities that presented themselves as we came out of it. You know, if we didn't go through that, I don't know we would have had this LCFF funding formula that is it's not the perfect formula, but it is a formula that's ahead of much in the nation of having a recognition financially that some students and some school systems have greater challenges because of the composition of the students that you serve. And that I'm not so sure that would have happened if we didn't have a recession. So my optimism comes in. I know we're going to get out of this. We are in a state that has good bones and foundation and a lot of innovation. So I think we're going to somehow there will be some positives that will come out of this, and we will come out of this. So just I know some things are cyclical, and this is going to be a tough period of time, no doubt. No doubt. It's going to be probably it's probably going to be tougher than the recession from 10, 11 years ago. But that's part of my optimism. Part of my immediate optimism is obviously that federal bill that got passed. And I know there's conversation about it, but I have to be optimistic about that. Because without that, there's just going to be a lot more layoffs than what districts originally were planning for. And like I said,
that's the federal relief pack, the latest package that's now to the Senate.
Absolutely. The HEROES. Yeah, we need that. That could really mitigate. And you see it in the May revision and in the Senate's language, too. That could really be helpful for us to help us adjust for next year and give us some at least some time to adjust.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, very good. Anything else that you want to close with?
Other than to say, just once again, thanks to CASPO. I always thank CASA too. CASA, there, you know, we share resources all the time, and like someone said, hey, whenever something comes out of organizations like School Services of California, FICMAT, CASPO, CSBA, AXA, you read them, right? And so, just thanks again for all the work that everybody's doing, and trying to make sure that we're sharing. We're trying to work smarter together. Through this pandemic, and that's so needed at this time. So thank you.
Work smarter together and share. Those are excellent words to leave off with. A big thanks to Superintendent Daryl Camp for being our guest. And many thanks to you for joining us on Adventures in Ed Funding, the series presented by CASBO. Jamie Dial is the president, and Molly McGee Hewitt is the CEO and Executive Director. My name is Paul Richman, and I'm your series guide. Tommy Dunbar handles all of our music, sound, and editing. We appreciate your interest in the show and appreciate your being part of our growing community. We welcome your feedback at edfundingca@gmail.com. And please be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Keep an ear out for an upcoming episode all about why schools should not go back to business as usual once we get through the pandemic. And until next time, be safe, be kind, and be courageous.